All right, we are going to continue on 24 Fort Sisseton State Park update and new visitor center concept.
There we go. Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners, Secretary Roebling. Thank you for the opportunity to come in and give you an update of what we've been working on at Fort Sisseton since the last report, a little over a year ago, and started on this master planning efforts. And as Chris is getting ready there, this presentation is kind of two parts. We kind of have an update of what we've been working on through this. A lot of that master plan had to do with some facility assessments and kind of work that was on our plate there looking forward in-house. And then the second part, moving on to some of our visitor center concepts that came out of that master plan. So this is kind of a story of asset management for me. A lot of what we do at the fort is kind of twofold, right? We've got the history and the stories we tell, and then we also have the facilities that we take care of and care for. And we have a lot of wooden cedar shingle built roofs. We've got a lot of rock and stone and brick facilities. Most people don't even think like, oh, windows, doors. We have heating and climate control utilities for many of these structures. And then I'm going to touch a little bit on projects on the books and then some building assessment work that we're continuing on with. So here on this little bit of a picture show as we go through the wooden roofs. And I tried to add in a few pictures of what these facilities looked like pre-game, fish, and parks, right? So you can kind of see kind of what we've been doing and why we're doing it and why we work so hard to keep these facilities up. So on the left-hand side there, that's we do in the northeast, we do kind of an annual maintenance. We do larger projects and then also include that in as more of an educational piece, right? Let's teach our staff how to work on these roofs. We don't just have wooden roofs at the fort, right? All of our camping cabins have wooden roofs. And so let's learn how to maintain these things. And so that, like that roof we're working there with the lift, that I believe was done in like the early 90s. You know, so we're looking at buildings that have, you know, 30 plus year old wooden roofs, and our hopes are with doing this work, we can extend that out another, you know, 5 plus years in process before we end up getting to a replacement. Things that I've noticed since being in place up there, the fort has kind of been a boomer bust. Oh, we got money, let's go work on these things. And then go, whoop, roofs, like we bring in inmate crews and work roofs. And so all the roofs will get done at the same time. Geotherm is a great idea. We need to come in, we'll do geotherm all within 5 years. Well, we've got like 20 geotherm units and like 6 geotherm wells all done at the same time. Well, and what that does is kind of create a bottleneck, right? As you look through in capital development and future replacement work, it puts everything timing out at the same time. And so trying to really put in a high element amount of preventative maintenance going into protecting these structures and being able to space out this needed work out, better match our funding. So on the, go back, please. So you'll see like on the other side, we've got the commanding officer's quarters up top and then officer's quarters and then the kind of a reminiscent photo there of what that facility looked like before us. But these projects are pretty expensive, right? And so I can throw 15 folks at a building, and actually on that day, I think we took care of 3 roofs. You know, so we can spend a whole day and maybe prolong this 3, 4, 5 years before we have to get into another round of replacements. Go ahead. So these are two different types that we call tuck pointing. And I don't know if you're familiar with tuck pointing, but I refer to it as I'm using the point of a trowel and I'm tucking mortar back in between stones and brick, right? Tuck point. So on the left-hand side there, that's their doctor's residence. And you kind of see a before and after, right? We go through and we've done with the contractor, and we bring that structure at the ground level down below ground. Like, these buildings aren't built on foundations like you and I would think we'd build a building today, right? These are stone and brick buildings built on the ground. And so what we see is a lot of freeze-thaw damage at that ground level, right? As frost rises and falls, it grabs, you know, the texture of the rocks and the brick. and start to cause building problems. So we go down a ways and we enter in, we lay in foam and try and add an insulative layer to that to cause some separation between where that ground can affect that building as much. So a little before and after. The building on the right, it really amazes me with the work you can do on these, like literally between that door and the window, remove the whole wall, and that structure still stands. And then you can see the after product there. And on these buildings, part of the windows, it's shocking how many windows are there, but both of these buildings have had windows updated and replaced, and we go back and replace those with the period wood style windows. So this one I just added for interest. It really astonishes me. Listen, this is the magazine. It's a combination of stone and brick, and although it has a pitched roof on the top, it's actually on the inside. If you're ever there, you should look. The ceiling is actually brick and concave. Does that for because it was designed to hold munitions, and you can see how thick that wall is, and the brick is actually double and triple layer on some of that building. And so when we do this brick work on those, we're actually able to maybe steel interior bricks that maybe haven't seen the sun and the rain. We bring those to the outside, turn them around, and we have a fresh facing brick again. On the stone piece, if you notice that we've got on the right hand side, we've got a before and after picture there, and well, before in the pre-game fish and parks and an after the project. I'll call out like some of these things to me, like when you look at these things and you learn like cornerstone. What is, you know, like a cornerstone, and have some actual thought of what a cornerstone actually means. And you look at this structure on that facing corner, right? You've got those large, significant stones, right? And so you go back in history, there are prior game fish and parks, and you'll notice on that far corner on the bottom, those cornerstones are still in place. Even though we've completely gone through and rehabbed that entire side of the building, they mapped those stones out, and we replaced them back where they are, trying to keep it historically accurate to what it was. So, go ahead. Geotherm, also not a very attractive picture, but we've learned a lot. I am not a geothermal, geophysicist, HVAC extraordinaire, but I've learned a lot about geothermals. It turns out there's not a lot of people that are really, really versed in geotherm. With this whole thing was we assessed all of those systems. Like say we try and be efficient and harvest ground energy to heat and cool these buildings. The better we are at keeping those buildings internally at a consistent temperature, the longer those buildings will last. And again, these geotherms were all put in, and we all timed out about between 20 and 25 years. They all started to fail. And so we've been working our way, going through all of those, replacing the wells, replacing the units above ground. So that's been updated. Go ahead. So projects, where to go? I'll start here on the lower right-hand side. This is the hospital. This building is due for a new roof starting, I think materials get delivered on the 9th, so starting next week. Then the contract will be coming in and doing that work. This is a pretty complex roof, got a lot of different angles and valleys and two floors and widow's walks on tops and strange things going on. But a couple of interesting photos down below, as this building has had a very long history between military and hunting lodge and all of these different eras in time. So a couple different levels of modification and disrepair below. So the other photos on there, like so to the left, you'll see that's more of an overview of the fort. You can see there's a square on those internal grounds going around. This is a boardwalk on the parade grounds. We had a project to come in and replace that boardwalk. And in the meantime, ARPA came around and it was found that we were going to start with a lagoon project here because we knew the lagoon system was failing, getting over vegetated. Well, what we found was we have a lot of errors in design of this sewer system at this park with force mains with 90 degree corners and root problems and some leaking problems. And so, okay, so that ARPA project now grew to like, we're gonna work on the water lines and sewer lines in this park, but we got these federal dollars coming in to help that as well. Well, that also affected our boardwalk project, right? They're gonna come in and tear out underneath one quarter of that boardwalk. Well, we're gonna have that contractor do that on our behalf. And then the park staff will be coming in and replacing the remaining of that boardwalk here this fall. So. And so another interesting thing that come out of the master plan was one of the, well, actually a couple, South Dakota Department of Ag and Natural Resource staff, Kayla Fawcett and Macy Jo Peterson. Kayla contacted me and she had picked up on a news release of the master plan that went out and said, oh my gosh, I'm applying for a brownfields grant through the EPA that's actually designed for assessment of kind of abandoned, unused buildings and trying to create, have them assessed and maybe put them on a track back to contribute back to the local community, help tourism, economic growth in local communities. And lo and behold, she received her grant. State received over $3 million from the EPA. That's just a snippet from up there, but you know, and you see the Fort Sisson was one of the name holders of that that grant. On the bottom there, that South Dakota Department of Ag and Natural Resource committed to protecting and preserving our environment and natural resources through the assessment of blighted properties across the state, according to Secretary Hunter Roberts. Using these grant dollars to expand our brownfields program will help ensure abandoned properties and properties assessed, facilitating growth and development in our communities. And so as part of this, go ahead, you know, we've got 14 standing buildings. The Fort Sisson is one of the best preserved Western expansion forts in the nation. And so this is just a placeholder for those buildings. And we've got about 46,000 square feet of buildings we maintain on this property, just on the historical fort grounds proper. And part of that grant, we're gonna assess things like lead paint and asbestos. You've seen me up here before talking about how many things our staff do with these facilities. We wanna make sure that we're protecting them and the public that accesses these properties as well. But we're gonna expand into the structure a little bit. With that master plan, we did have an engineering firm come in and do a kind of a, I would say, a ground level assessment. And then that kind of left us with a lot of questions, right? We've got some floor separation, why are these cracks in this wall, why we've got some of this observed movement on the interior of the building. And so we've prioritized five of these structures. We're gonna come in and they're gonna pay to have another engineering firm come in and do a deeper dive into the assessment. Like either what can we do to remediate the stresses in those buildings, or even just give us a plan of how to modify or monitor, right? Like kind of we don't know. Maybe this crack's always been there. Maybe this floor has always been separated from this building. We don't really know that in our times. So, yeah, go ahead. So that's where we're looking, where we're going. So now the second part of this, you've heard me present on the master plan, and one of those concepts was for a visitor center. And so why is the visitor center, why was this important, right? We looked at improving our customer experience. Through surveys in that master plan, the number one item our users of Fort Sisson expect to be involved in is in the museum and the visitor center. And so we're going to take that number one experience that they're looking for, and we're going to try and do what we do and make it the best we can. We're looking at improved use for technology. We're going to increase museum archive integrity, expand historical interpretation. We do a darn fine job of talking about the military and that history, but there's a lot of different histories that are involved in this property. We're improve park operations, of course, while we're doing that. And then I'm going to introduce some of our governor's commission on Fort Sisson. A few of them are here today, and we're going to talk about their efforts. So why is this important? So just a little short history lesson here. I did not get A's in history in my life, so I do have some things written down here from my notes. But so the military record started in 1864, roughly 25 years. The fort served as a military encampment. So upon decommissioning in 1890, there was a legislative act that was passed to surplus military reservation. That reservation, I think about it like as a township, right? It's a mass of miles. And all said and done, the fort proper was left in that last remaining section in the middle. And so that last 640 acres was gifted to the state of South Dakota from the Department of Interior in 1895. So there it sat for a little while, with people not really knowing what to do with it, and eventually in 1921, it was leased out as a hunting lodge and run as a commercial hunting operation. You'll notice on the top right, I kind of chuckle about these waterfowl hunters. I don't think they've changed much. You know, they still have, you know, their proper attire that they wear, right? We may not be trench coats and formal hats and ties, but now it's just Sitka head to toe. But they still, you know, really know how to put together an ensemble. And so the waterfowls, I'm very proud of them for keeping that going. But so that lasted for about 8 years, and it was a, you know, and so you think about that, and really in the game, fish, and parks, and with the ties to commercial hunting in the Northeast, and why those become passionate conversations, because it is part of a heritage and a culture in that area. Moving on to 1932, the lower left, that's a picture of a WPA work group, and this served as a home for a camp for those gentlemen for another 8 years, 1932 to 1939. Right, so a lot of young men and then came through that through the fort grounds, whether through military or WPA era. Shortly after, it became a bombing range, so it was actually a test grounds for Air National Guard out of Watertown for a couple years. And then in 1959, that's the lower right, that's Governor Herseth there at the commemoration of 1959 of Fort Sisson becoming a state park. So. And then on 1973, it became a historic landmark and a state historic landmark and sits on the National Historic Sites and currently has an application in for a federal national landmark status. And that's, you know, Mount Rushmore, Statue of Liberty type status. So significant. And just to throw out some shiny objects through this era, you know, the hunting lodge brought in some interest out there, you know, you know, connections to William Boyce, founder of the Boy Scouts of America, owner of the Chicago Tribune, came out for hunting trips, right? And so that becomes of an interest, right? Now, connection and ties to Boy Scouts. William Hamm, owner of the Hamm's Brewery. Chris might appreciate that here. But some of the interesting, you know, like at Clark Gable, Al Capone, right? You might see some of these connections to the Chicago area type thing, right, coming back. I have a hard time getting seasonal staff coming 10 miles from town, but yet we got people traveling the whole country to come see this place and experience it, what we have to offer. You know, General George Custer, I also stopped at Fort Sisson on his way out west. He probably should have stopped longer before he got to the Bighorns, but such those things were a part of the fort's history. Go ahead. Okay, so why those things are important, why we want to do that and expand that interpretation and interest, visitor center. So we've got our commissioners here, and I'll have them stand up here in a bit, but one of our commissioners, Todd Gary out of Webster, reached out to, we're going on this fundraising mission, right? We want the Fort Commission to lead this charge, right? This isn't really the department initiative, but, you know, interpretation, education, those types of things, we really look to the commission to help us lead those charges. And so Todd reached out to a past youngster from Webster, Thomas Squires, became an architect, worked for Design Art Group out of Sioux Falls, and they got talking about it, and one of the principals at Design Art is Les Rowland, who actually his father was the executive director of Glacial Lakes Prairie and Tourism. And so you'll kind of see a theme here, right? Like we got a lot of tourism and economic development and bringing people in the area type philosophies going on. And so those two, along with Allie Coomer, designed the interior and exterior of this building. Like we tried to keep some ideas of what that roof looks like. We want things to look similar, not out of place, but not old either. We need to look modern. Like not part of the historic structures. So go ahead. Oh, just a second. So before you go through, like some of the operation, right, you didn't just envision like maybe a school bus pulling up or groups of folks. We now can address accessibility. Like that right now you think some of these things are pretty simple. We do every day. At a fort, it's really hard to manage accessibility, getting people in and out of these buildings. Down a historic boardwalk that's made with rough cut dimensional lumber, right? Like some of these things are really hard and trying to give that opportunity to folks. No, go ahead. Okay, so now you enter in, you come in through the entrance here, and that you come in, and that green desk there would be a welcoming area, gathering point for maybe a start of a tour, or kind of a staging area. As you continue above the green and over through the left, we have a small small theater. Maybe we can produce a movie at some point in time to help improve that experience and onboard those visitors to the property. And then we have the exhibit hall and archives, not archives, a museum and interpretive area. Excuse me. And then as you come down, you'd exit back in through exit the visitor hall, the interpretation hall, through a gift shop and back through the welcome area to stage before you go out. Go back for 1 second there. Sorry, Chris. So then you'll just, we've identified to the right-hand side is really more administrative stuff. We got, you know, bathrooms, we got mechanical area, we've got a classroom, a small boardroom, much like we're doing here today. I have a 15-member commission helps advise us for the Fort Sisseton efforts, and so we can need places to have those meetings as well. We've got an archives research area, some storage and workspace, and a break room. So this is just some of the designs of what it looks like on the interior as you welcome that welcome desk, a classroom to the right, on the bottom, the meeting room, and then that archives and research area. You know, as you look back, and we've got soldiers, we have WPA workers, we have a large group of people that just want to seek out family members, right? Like, they told these stories, right? Like, oh, we're back here. I want to, can I find the name of my relative in these books, what is the connection? How do I find my past? So kind of an area where we can all work together or work under supervision to help find that information within our archives. Just an interior view, kind of matching that, you'll see that fieldstone look. I guess I do want to mention, like, we've learned a lot about fieldstone, and we don't intend to build a fieldstone building. These are veneer-style concepts, right, that we can maintain a little easier today. Go ahead. And then these groups would exit the visitor center and then come in through the south, the more formal entrance of the fort proper itself. So how do we plan to go about this? And I think we've had a lot of chicken and egg conversations between a campground and a visitor center. And to me, I kind of see them as two separate paths. We've got a commission that I think is able and capable of taking on and moving this fundraising and trying to fit that mission for that. Where camping is really what Game Fish and Parks does, right? So let's let them go on their path and help them be successful. So this is a 15-member governor's appointed commission, much like yourselves. And the standing committee member is Secretary Hagen, the Secretary of Tourism, who genuinely has an appointed replacement at each one of the meetings. I'm going to ask these members to stand up. We've got Bruce Prinz, who's our chairman of our commission. We have Kurt Jones as a vice president. Kurt's dad, Kurt Jones, worked hand in hand with Governor Janklow, one of the initial movements of rehabilitating the fort. Doug Adol out of Groton, Bill Hoskins out of Sioux Falls. We got Rosie Smith. Rosie Smith is here with out of Watertown. She's the director of the Glacial Lakes and Prairie Tourism Board. Casey Wisemantle, I've already apologized to Casey from Aberdeen here. I've got him listed as the chamber executive. That is the CVB executive director on record here, Casey. Sorry and thank you. Todd Gary is also here. You've heard me mention him as well of getting that design art group going. As well as we have Calvin Ho from Sisseton, Jim Patrick out of Watertown, Linda Quay from Wilmont, Chuck Verkota from Veblen, and Joanne Hawkinson from Britton. I do have two vacant positions open on that. I had one filled and closed and vacated in the same week, unfortunately. So there's two. So if you happen to know some folks, send them my way. So these are the folks that we really want to, I guess, I feel like my job, our job, is to support them moving forward in their fundraising efforts. Of course, the South Dakota Parks and Wildlife Foundation will be a player in where those funds go and how those funds are managed. But these are really the folks that are going to be pressing hard charge on this project. So with that, I thank you for your time. Appreciate that. I want to also throw you another reminder that our festival starts today, about 1 o'clock this afternoon, schedules start picking up, ramping up through the evening, and really hitting full charge tonight, Saturday and Sunday. So thank you for your time. And I'll ask any questions.
Very good. Thank you, Willie. Questions from the commission? Willie, could you just help me understand, in terms of funding, how does this work with a commission that works, appointed by the governor for Fort Sisseton in addition to GFMP? How would that funding process work?
So funding process. So the for the visitor center, those funds that they raise will go and be housed within our South Dakota Parks and Wildlife Foundation.
Okay.
And so, and it's really pretty typical that all of the fundraising that our park manager, Allie, she's abuzz with all sorts of things going on, right? She manages 170 to 180 events a year. Like this is always an active place. But all of that fundraising then ends up in the Parks and Wildlife Foundation, and then we use the advice of our Fort Commission on how we spend those funds. That right there, they're much like yourself. They're our public sounding voice of, are we being responsible and that kind of thing. But they advise us on those funds.
Okay, that helps me. Thank you, Secretary.
Willie, can you elaborate a little bit though on how this commission though is still the budgetary authority of the park operations at Fort Sisseton? Can you just kind of cover some of that?
Yeah. So. So today on item five, you guys went through and we talked about the information items and approval of our game fish and parks budget. And on the park side, we do go through the legislature on all those funds that are budgeted, right? They formally approve the park side budget, our capital development budget. And so from fundraising end up in the Parks and Wildlife Foundation. And so we operate those as a little bit of a different mechanism. Depending on the route of where this goes, I don't even really know how this goes yet or how this will end, right? Some of those funds end up getting transferred directly into our budget, and we utilize that budget authority to spend those. And some of them are spent directly out of the foundation itself from those fundings. And so it's a little bit of a little bit separate in there, but on the park side, all of our capital development stuff always runs through legislator funding and information items for yourselves as well. Does that answer your question, Kevin? Sort of. Do you have another question or? Okay. All right.
All right. Thank you for that. Any other questions from the commission? Good presentation. Yeah. We appreciate it. Thank you. Good luck this weekend in Sisseton, Fort Sisseton.
Appreciate it.
And with that, we'll